Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. I've decided to take today and talk to you myself. Just chat with you about important things going on. I'm going to tell you about our conference that comes up pretty soon. I'm going to talk to you about some of the latest issues with children. I'll talk to you some about my new book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and how it's doing, and scientific papers that I'm writing that are coming out from the book. So I'm just going to talk to you about a bunch of different things. Well, to begin with, the conference, this is going to be our best ever conference. I'm pretty sure of that. And it's in an area we've not been in before, but that's pretty easy to get to. The conference is April 17, 18, and 19. That's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday toward the end of April. It's in East Lansing, Michigan. East Lansing has its own airport. I'm flying there relatively easily from Ithaca, New York. And if I can fly to East Lansing from Ithaca easily, I just go to Detroit and then on to East Lansing. You can fly in to Chicago and East Lansing. So it's an easy place to get to. It's on the Michigan State University campus at a really nice facility there. There's a hotel right there. By the way, the hotel's already filled up for the Thursday night before. If you're coming in the night before, you'll see alternative. You can call the hotel or you can go to empathictherapy.com. There are alternative hotels you could do the first night. And then you could stay at the Kellogg Center where we've reserved rooms for Friday and Saturday night. So, you know, it's just going to be a wonderful, easy to get to hotel right across the street. There are these wonderful cafeteria that's run by the school that has a lot of good food available from the cooking school students. The conference begins in the morning on April 17th. It's co-sponsored by a dear friend, Bert Caron, the Michigan Psychoanalytic Council that he's been associated with for decades. But it's not an especially psychoanalytically oriented conference. In fact, the one person who's going to be presenting the psychoanalytic viewpoint is Bert Caron himself, who is, I think, the most esteemed clinical psychologist in America today. He's at all kinds of awards. He was one of the very first people to support me in the anti-psychosurgery campaign. And when I was doing that campaign back in the 70s, he was just listening to me. He heard me speak at the and he was just a real supporter. I didn't really know how much of a supporter he was until after they went after my medical license back in the 1980s because I was having such an impact. I'd been on Oprah Winfrey criticizing drugs. So they went after my medical license on the grounds that I'd said illegal things on Oprah Winfrey, if you can imagine that. Wrong issue. They not only got the press to follow the license attack, this is a bit of an aside, but probably interesting, but they got my wife, Ginger Bregan, angry, and she decided, why am I going to college and doing all these things? She was doing marvelously at college and winning awards, and she said, I'm going to work just support my husband and his work, and she brought her enormous talents to helping me during the licensing attack, which we won. And they apologized. They said it was a freedom of speech issue, which it was, and it put me on the map. It was a roaring success in that regard, although very scary at the time. And I learned then that when you're attacked in a public position and you're right, you just fight back with all your might. You don't accommodate or let fear overcome you. we were blessed and we were fortunate and we won. And that's when I met Burke Caron, because somebody said, you're having trouble getting big name psychologists, psychiatrists to support you. Burke Caron, give him a buzz. So I called Burt. Burt said, I've been following your work and supporting your work for years and years. And he wrote a marvelous letter to the medical society. Medical society was inundated with letters from around the country supporting me and my work back then. So that's an introduction to Burt Caron, who will be speaking with me at the conference, along with a lot of other people. This is really a good conference, folks. I'm going to take you through some of the presenters, and taking you through the presenters will be an introduction to some of the best things going on in the world today in the field of psychiatry. So it starts the morning of April 17th. And again, if you can't stay in the hotel the night of the Thursday night, there are good hotels right around there, and they can tell you about that. And then you can at the same time register for the rooms that do remain on Friday and Saturday at the hotel. So you can be there with us and, hang around, talk to us in the evening and so on. So it starts in the morning on April 17th with me and Bert doing a welcome. Then I'm going to talk for an hour about psychiatric drugs versus therapy in life. I'm going to do you an overview of the things I've learned in my 60 years of working in this field. Then after coffee break, Bob Whitaker. Bob, who is runs the website Mad in America, and he's written marvelous books, one of them Mad in America, about psychiatry. And Bob is going to talk about research on successful psychosocial approaches for seriously disturbed folks. In other words, he's going to present you the research that shows that the psychiatric model falls down even with the patients they claim that only they can help, people who have the misfortune to be diagnosed schizophrenic, that those folks, there are programs all over the world, they have been in the past, there still are, and they're growing programs where if you help folks in the family and in the home, or these folks go to other homes and they get help in other homes, if you work on a family basis with therapists intervening to help in the family setting, so-called acute schizophrenia doesn't become schizophrenia because people get better. This is really interesting stuff. And then later in the conference, we're going to have some people talking about some of these better alternatives. So Bob's going to talk for an hour and a half. We're giving him a big space, and he's going to come back later in the program. After lunch at 2 o'clock, Michael Corrigan. Michael Corrigan is a psychologist, educational psychologist. He is probably the best entertainer I've seen in the field on these serious subjects. He's going to do a debunking ADHD with his own graphics, and he's really marvelous. Michael has a new blog out on Psychology Today, and I think you can probably get about ADHD. You can probably get that blog by Googling Michael Corrigan and ADHD and maybe Psychology Today. Michael's just an incredibly entertaining and insightful person, and we're going to give him an hour and a half. Then we're going to have a coffee break, and Michael Cornwall, who has been involved in some of the very earliest successful non-drug programs, is going to do a presentation, and it's going to involve a conversation with me. Not Michael Corrigan, but Michael Cornwall now. Two different Michaels with a C at the end. C at the beginning of their last name. So Michael, and he's a Langian-oriented therapist. He's just a good therapist, folks. Good therapists are good therapists. We do a lot of the same things, especially if we've been around a while. And he and I are going to dialogue, as well as him presenting, on therapy yesterday and today, and, of course, in the future. I'm really looking forward to that. So you're going to get to see a little more of me and a little more of Robert Whitaker at this conference than you might usually, and a little more Burke Karen. So you're going to get to know some of us better. We're not doing a lot of breakouts where you choose among 10 different or 5 different or 3 different folks. You're going to get to spend a lot of time with a few of us. At 5 o'clock, this is still Friday, Gina Calhoun is going to talk about the WRAP program, W-R-A-P. This is, again, something you can Google at the Copeland, that's done through the Copeland Center and Mary Ellen Copeland, who's been on this radio show. You can find her and listen to her on this radio show. Michael Cornwall's been on this show. Corrigan's been on this show. And so has Bob Whitaker. So these are all folks that are really, really good. Well, the representative is going to be Gina Calhoun, who really directs the program now. And this is this WRAP program is one of the most successful international programs for peer support. It's even had some scientific study, and it's been proven to work. And it works across the board from anything from cigarette addiction to people who have severe disabling psychoses that they've struggled with for years. And what the program involves, well, I'll tell you how it got started. Marianne Copeland started talking with a group of people about what did they need. And these were chronically disabled people who had these flare-ups that would send them into mental hospitals. And it turned out, well, they needed to, A, be able to identify when they were losing control of themselves. And then they needed to identify what helps them recover. So she's taken this model of helping people, usually in groups but not always, discover when they run into trouble and what their triggers are, and then what are the things that help them get out. And this has proven amazingly helpful to human beings. It's a very good program. It works for children. It works for adults. And Gina Calhoun's going to talk about that on Friday evening. We're talking about Friday evening, April 17th, the opening day of our annual conference, which we're doing with Burt Caron on the Michigan State campus. Easily place to get to at East Lansing. That evening, you have dinner on your own. There's lots of nice places around to eat, including inexpensive ones. And then one of Ginger's favorite things, at 7:30, we're going to have a dessert and a presentation. I don't know if he's going to do the chocolate fountain or not, but there's going to be a dessert after dinner. This is included in the conference registration. And that evening, we're going to have an astonishing visitor, Karina Hackinson from Sweden, the Family Care Foundation. She's going to talk about the placement of disturbed clients in farming communities. For about 20 or 30 years now, her program has been putting people into farm homes. This has been, you can find the internet, you can find a film about the Family Care Foundation placement program. it's really a marvelously developed approach. And basically, what she finds is that the simple life on a farm, where people can gradually, if they want, join into working with the families, feeding the goats or helping on the farm, being with the family, having some therapy, that this helps people who are really disturbed marvelously, and of course much better than traditional psychiatry and drugs. So that evening, Karina Hackinson, Hackanson, is going to present a program, and then Bert's going to introduce her, and I'm also going to introduce her, and we'll have a general discussion afterward. This one day is going to be one of the more unique days. Then comes Saturday, April 18th, from 9 to 11, Rebecca Hatton is going to present on open dialogue. This is the famous Finnish model for treating so-called schizophrenia, about how this model is coming to America. It's being developed around America by the Foundation for Excellence in Mental Health. My friends there are helping finance this program. And what it shows is that if you have a team of people who enter into the family, invited, of course, at the very early stages of a young person having their initial psychotic break, that you can help them so much, almost entirely without drugs, with the occasional use of benzos and the rare use of the antipsychotic drugs. Really, it's a psychosocial program that in Finland, where in the city of Lapland, where this program has been going on, they pretty much eradicated schizophrenia. The program works. See, we have working programs. The problem is these working programs completely undermine the psychopharmaceutical industry, organized psychiatry, the mental health lobby. So there are these programs. Come, learn about them and maybe learn ways that you could participate or in the development of these programs around the country. So Rebecca Hatton's going to talk. And about the Open Dialogue, which you can also Google online, Open Dialogue. After coffee break, a new friend, a psychiatrist from Denmark. His name is Peter C. Gotcha. I got to learn to pronounce it better when I meet him. And it's G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. He has been working on treating depression without drugs, and he's been studying how antidepressants do more harm than good. This is going to be a wonderful man to meet. I'm looking really, really forward to it. And it gives us added international flavor. Then from 11:30 to 12:30, it really should be fun. My dear friend, Jeannie Stolzer, S-T-O-L-Z-E-R, Stolzer. She is a professor in child development from the Midwest, from Kearney, Nebraska. She invited me out there to talk. 600 people came to hear me talk. We became dear friends for 1 hour on Saturday, April 18th at this conference on the our annual conference. It's going to be on Michigan State campus. For that hour, Jeannie Stolzer and Peter Bregan are going to have what I hope will be a rollicking, because she rollicks me, a rollicking discussion of, listen to this, listen, this is different, biological evolution and human relationship. And it's going to include a discussion of my concept of negative legacy emotions that's in my new book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, which, by the way, is now passing peer review and coming out various approaches to this. I'm publishing in three different journals, probably three, certainly two, about the implications of this new theory. So she and I are going to talk about this new theory. We're going to talk about it in terms of attachment theory as well. And it's going to be interesting because Jeannie and I, when we talk together, it's pretty wide open, and it ranges over human history. So that's going to be an hour on Saturday. Then we go to lunch. When we come back, another really interesting hour. And by the way, I'm really comfortable presenting all this to you, not just as come to the conference, because you don't have to come to the, you know, I mean, I'd love you to come to the conference. But I hope this is going to sort of tell you something about what's going on in the world of cutting-edge psychiatry and psychology. Well, the next presenter at 2 o'clock is going to be Tom Ryan. Tom is a pediatrician who, his brother is also a doctor, sent him a copy of one of my books a couple of years ago. And Tom Ryan, the pediatrician, sat up all night reading the book, and in the morning wrote a letter to his patients saying, "I am not going to be prescribing psychiatric drugs to children anymore. Hope you'll stay in the practice and we'll work together to help your child. Otherwise, you will need to go somewhere else to get medications. And he gave them a period of time, of course, when he would follow up on them until he found somebody. Well, hardly anybody left his practice. And he now has a drug-free psychiatric portion to his pediatric practice. And he's thriving, and it is thriving. And he's so much happier than he was when he was drugging people. People who drug people, they're not happy people. I don't think it works as a way of life. Then from 3 to 4, this ought to be very, very interesting because I know these folks very well. Tim Evans and Jerry Carter, who are therapists who work from an Adlerian viewpoint, but listen, all good therapists end up working a lot alike. But Tim Evans and Jerry Carter, dear friends of mine, they're going to talk about sex and love from an Adlerian viewpoint. And it will be about sex and love from an Adlerian viewpoint. And it really should be good. They do a lot of work helping couples have more loving, satisfying relationships. Then there's a coffee break, and from 4:30 to 6, and again, I'm just presenting this to you as, hey, this is actually the good stuff that goes on in our field. From 4:30 to 6, Bert Caron is going to talk about drugs, therapy, and life. And he's going to be joined by me. Remember, I promised you more exposure to me at this conference than any other I've done, but it's also so many other people. Bert Caron and I are going to talk. I'll be giving the lead to Bert about our 100-plus years of experience in psychiatry and psychology and therapy and where it's all going. People love to hear Bert Caron talk. I guarantee you when he ends at 6, people will stay around and miss dinner just to keep talking to him. Saturday evening is dinner on your own, and then back to dessert provided by the conference, paid for by your registration. And for an hour and a half, you and I and other people are going to have a conversation. The lead conversationalists will be Bob Whitaker again, Peter Getschy again, the Danish psychiatrist. He's come all the way over just for the conference, and me. And Bert will get involved. And we're going to talk about psychiatric drugs and better alternatives, and we're going to talk with you. That you've had dinner, now you've had dessert, and we're going to be there until we get tired. It's going to start at 8 o'clock. I don't know, 8 to 9:30, but I think it'll probably go on a lot longer than that. Who wouldn't want to speak to Bert and Bob and Peter and this Peter as long as they can, right? Then we go to Sunday, stay for Sunday. In the morning, Bert is going to talk about the psychoanalytic theory, especially for the work with deeply disturbed people, something that he knows more about and has done more of than anybody in the world. And you see this concentration on a few good folks rather than a lot of breakouts and stuff. And then we'll have coffee break, and Bob Foltz is going to talk. Bob Foltz is a psychologist. He's a teacher at the Chicago School of Psychology. He's really been courageous, far ahead of his profession, into the treatment of children and adults without drugs, and he's going to emphasize kids. Bob is a great speaker. He's full of life. I've had Bob on the radio show, I think, twice over the years. And then we're going to close from 12 to 12:30. We're going to close, and all the speakers who are still there, Bert and I in particular, will certainly be there. And we'll close and just talk and just visit with folks. And if you like, we'll all go to lunch together. And then we all fly home or drive home or walk home, depending on where you live. Folks, it's a great conference. So before I go to break in about 3 or 4 minutes, let me re-describe the conference to you. The conference is the 2015 Empathic Therapy Conference. You can find out about it and register by going to empathictherapy.org. pathictherapy.org. You can go to Bregan.com and then go over to pathictherapy.org. It's April 17th through 19th. It's well placed on the Michigan State University campus in East Lansing. It's easy to get to. The speakers for 2.5 days, Friday, April 17th through Sunday, the 19th in the afternoon. We're going to have several people from around talking about programs from around the world. You're going to get to hear a lot of Bob Whitaker, a lot of Peter Bregan, a lot of Bert Caron. You're going to get to hear Michael Corrigan, who does the most interesting presentation on ADHD by far that I've ever seen. Michael Cornwall, who's a therapist of infinite understanding. He comes at it from both having been through the system as a client of the system, then having helped develop alternatives and being a lifelong therapist. We are going to hear about open dialogue. You're going to hear me and Jeannie Stulzer having a rollicking time talking about human evolution and how we got to the way we are. You're not going to hear that anywhere else in the world. Tom Ryan, pediatrician, talking about making his practice drug-free. And Tim Evans and his wife, Jerry Carter, talking about sex and love. Bert Caron on therapy and life. Then that evening again, Bob Whitaker and me and other guests, Peter Getz from Getcha from and Bert, just talking about life with you all. We're trying to make this an intense and fulfilling conference. And then we're going to go to the morning, and Bert Caron's going to talk about his experience and interact. He promises a lot of interaction with the audience. He's so good at that. But his experience working with the most disturbed people. And I'll tell you what you learn basically from working from the most disturbed people is that we're all mostly disturbed, and we all need the same things. And he's going to be talking about that. Then Bob Faults on working with children and adolescents without drugs. He's really an inspiring talker. And then a closing with a whole bunch of us. So, hey, come join us. Come join us. I would love to make this our best conference ever. I'm not sure, folks. I don't know how Ginger would feel about my saying this, but I'm not sure how long we'll keep doing conferences. They're time-consuming. When we don't make money from them, we do them as a gift. We do them to relate to the world. You know, I think we'll probably do one more in Tampa, co-sponsor one in Tampa next year with our friends down there. Maybe, you know, that's – but, you know, I'm not going to do these things forever. This is a really good time. I'm in good health, though, folks. But we're not going to do these forever. And Ginger and I are discussing that. And we hope to make this one the just about the best, we're hoping the very best we've ever done. So come join us. And as we go to the music, hang around until the next half hour. I'm going to talk about some of the startling new research on how horrible it's turning out for children diagnosed with ADHD and given drugs. And I'm going to talk some about guilt, shame, and anxiety, my new book, and the research that I'm publishing, too, that goes along with the book. So talk to you in a few minutes, folks. Hi, folks. Thanks for listening to the first half hour about the Empathic Therapy Conference. That's going to be April 17th, 18th, and 19th. And again, you can get all the that's at East Lansing in Michigan. It's going to be a wonderful setting, wonderful conference, best ever. And again, you can learn more about it by going to empathictherapy.org. Now, I want to talk to you some about children, and then I want to talk to you some about guilt, shame, and anxiety. This is going to be sort of a potpourri. And by the way, I don't know about this going to iTunes. I just heard on the ad and liking the show and telling people you like it. But it sounds like a good idea. So you could do that for us too. Go to iTunes and like the show, whatever that means or how you do that. I imagine if I went there, I'd figure it out. If I couldn't figure it out, I'd say, Ginger, and she'd come help me figure it out. It's wonderful to have my own techie in the house. God bless her. I don't know how I could have moved into fully this century without Ginger on call, helping me with a million different things and carrying out so many important projects of her own. So the stuff I'm going to talk about is really kind of unbelievable. So I'm going to start out with an actual citation. And so you can go right to it. You could also go to my book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, because the first half of that book, people don't realize, the first half of that book is all about the latest information on how harmful the drugs are. So it's like a follow-up on my earlier books, elaborating on how bad the drugs are. That's the first half of Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. And you can get that as an e-book, which is, of course, much cheaper than the other way to get it, but they're however you wanted to go. But I'm going to give you a citation that you could probably find by Googling it, and it's Deprol, P-R-O-A-L, first name E, Eprol and others. And the title is Brain Gray Matter Deficits. Now, brain gray matter deficits means that you're losing your brains. It means your brain's shrinking. Cells are dying. And what's your gray matter? Those are the cells. And where are they? They're in the highest centers of the brain, these particular cells. So it's loss of the highest centers of your brain being basically harmed badly, so badly you can see it on a brain scan. So brain gray matter deficits, a 33-year follow-up in adults with attention deficit disorder established in childhood. Well, where is this article? It's in the Archives of General Psychiatry. That's an AMA publication in 2011, volume 68, page, starts on page 1122. Okay. Those of you who have access to university, you know, you can get that article. You can find the citation in Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. But what does this all mean? What does an article like this mean? Is this something you get excited about? Well, let me give you the background. 30 years earlier, as they're suggesting, roughly 3 to 4 decades earlier, this study group, which included Rachel Klein. You want to find out more about these horror shows and these horrible people? Go to look up Rachel Klein. Look up Esmanuza. Look up Castellanos, FX Castellanos. These are some of the people in who are doing the writing here. Well, it goes back to Rachel Klein all the way back. She was way back in the 30s, running this, in the 30s, 30 years ago, running this study. What they do that now we have people with shrunken brains in their highest centers. They went to a school and they said, if you refer us ADHD children, we'll treat them for free. They went to the school. We'll treat them for free. The parents were called in later. This was an idea that came to the teachers. And what did they want them to report? Children with mild hyperactivity. The study ended up involving, therefore, kids identified not at home as having problems, and a number of them didn't. What does that tell you? And they ruled out of the study anybody. By the way, it's the first time I've talked about this in such detail. It's so horrific. They ruled out anybody who had serious problems like setting fires, getting in fights, had any other psychiatric diagnoses at all, had any drug problems, because they were only 7 or 8 at the time. In other words, normal boys, all boys, normal boys who were felt to be mildly hyperactive by some people. Because some of the psychologists didn't think they could find anything wrong with them. The psychiatrists, they like to find things wrong with you. So these were kids who basically were absolutely normal. I'm certain they had normal brains, absolutely normal, no neurological disorders, no physical disorders of importance, who were then put on these drugs. And what were they put on? Ritalin, generally considered to be less harmful than even Adderall. I don't think that's so, but generally considered to be less harmful than Adderall. They're all amphetamines or amphetamine-like. The drugs nowadays would be like Focalin and Ritalin and Metadate and I mentioned Adderall and amphetamine in general. That whole bunch of stimulant drugs. They're very similar drugs. They're practically identical to methamphetamine. They're very similar to cocaine, too. They all hit the same neurotransmitter systems. It's just that that when you put the methyl, when you methylate it, and it, you get the methamphetamine, or if you go to cocaine, you get something that hits harder and faster. So it's just an extreme of the damage that these other drugs are also doing. So now what happens? You follow these children over the years. Let's see how they do. I mean, after all, they needed their drugs, didn't they? Well, one of the ways they do 30 years later is they have brain damage. Serious enough. It takes serious brain damage to show up on a brain scan as, quote again, brain gray matter deficits, a 33-year follow-up in adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder established in childhood. Now, there are other studies going on all around these people and other people following up 30 years later, these kind of kids, and especially this group from Rachel Klein. And what do they find? What happened to you if you were a normal kid started on Ritalin 30 years earlier? You want to know what happened to you? You have statistically significant increased rates compared to a normal control group taken from the same clinic, not diagnosed ADHD, but a normal control group from the same clinic. Because remember, there was nothing wrong with these kids. The normal control group is proper for them. What happens in comparison? Well, everything you can measure goes wrong. Think about something you can measure. It goes wrong. They end up with less education. They end up with with not as good jobs. They end up with more hospitalizations, psychiatric. They end up with more jail time, significantly more. They end up more obese. They end up with shortened lifespan. They die more frequently early on. And this is a group of relatively young people. By age 40, it's already establishing that you're dying earlier on these drugs. Excuse me. Clearing my throat. I don't dare use the mute button because the last time I did that, I forgot to unmute it. That was a couple of years ago. It's a disaster, people. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. Now, I've really tried to ramp up my response to this. Oh, well, wait a minute. Let me stop a minute. Because you're naturally and reasonably asking, well, why did they get so destroyed? Well, it wasn't because they were on Ritalin the rest of their lives. Most of them weren't even on stimulants anymore. Not even on them anymore. What happened is that taking Ritalin and your parents and teachers being told and you that you're a mental patient, you got ADHD, led to a lifetime of being a mental patient. That's what happened. Now, why would that happen? Well, there are many reasons why. If you tell a kid they got ADHD, you start them on Ritalin, and you tell the parents and teachers that the kid's got ADHD, why their life, in a statistically significant proportion of them, goes south, deep south, even to early death and brain damage. By the way, I've never talked so forthrightly and directly about this, so listen to this and, you know, send it on if you want to other people to listen to. Because as I'm talking, I'm just getting more revved up about talking about it in depth like this. Well, one thing that happens is you start getting side effects to the Ritalin. Ritalin is horribly depressing. So many of these kids end up on antidepressants. Very bad for them. Ritalin causes insomnia. All the stimulants do this. All of them. Even Strattera, the so-called non-stimulant stimulant, has all these adverse effects, other than addiction. Oh, by the way, that was another thing, increased rate of addiction on these kids when they grow up. So they get put on stimulants. They get adverse effects like depression. They get insomnia, so then they're getting antidepressants. They may be getting a drug for insomnia. They often get agitated. They may be put on benzos just from the drug. And a surprisingly number of children develop psychotic symptoms on stimulants. The best study I've seen that looked back at a clinic over many years and what happened to the children found that 10% of them at some point or another show psychotic symptoms. The FDA says 1%. That would be a disaster, but it's way, way above that. So they end up on antipsychotic drugs as well. And that's what happened to these people. The researchers aren't telling you that, but you can see it in the data. They ended up on multiple psychiatric drugs for the rest of their lives, long having forgotten, and their parents and teachers having forgotten that they were just hyperactive kids as some teachers referred to a clinic. Evil. It's absolutely evil. And that's not the only reason the kids end up like that. It's not just because of the adverse effects of the drugs. The worst thing you do for a child is to teach them they can't control themselves. After all, what is the major goal of any sensible parent? Is it to have your child love you for the rest of your life? No. Is the goal to create the smartest person on earth? No, we don't do that through child rearing. What do? We raise our kids. We teach them to be responsible. We teach them to take charge of their lives, and then we send them forth to become themselves and develop and grow and give and enjoy. So if you take a 7-year-old and you tell them, as they often do, you have bad breaks in your brain, you can't control your behavior, you have undermined the most fundamental principle of growth and development in childhood. This is a horror, folks. Now, what does the parent learn from this? Parent learns I'm not responsible for disciplining my child. If my kid is jumping around at the dinner table, I can't teach him not to. If we're in a restaurant jumping around, or he's in school jumping around, that's what it teaches you. And that, of course, spreads across the board. If you can't teach your kid the most simplest thing, like sitting still, what can you teach them? Nothing. You drug them. So it takes away from parents' responsibility for their children and ends the satisfaction of that hard work of raising kids, which is so tough. I think the hardest work in the world is raising children. And what happens to the teachers? Well, if they drug enough of their kids, they don't have to worry about their inability to handle the classroom. And boy, does that if you don't think that escalates, we now have 20% of our boys in high school diagnosed ADHD because it just escalates. We give up responsibility happily to the world of psychopharmacology. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And again, I describe the disaster along with many other adverse effects and problems with the drugs, including the drugging of the children and psychiatric drug withdrawal. And I've already given you a scientific reference that you can go to for yourself. Oh, and by the way, watch the BS that they give to explain it. They're going to say the gray matter shrinkage is because the kids had ADHD. It causes gray matter. No, it doesn't. We have infinite number of studies showing stimulant drugs shrink brain tissue, not ADHD, which is just a diagnosis given to kids who do things that annoy teachers, like talking out of turn and squirming in their seats and not standing on line. We have studies showing damage to animals from the stimulants. We now know that every class of psychiatric drugs can cause damage to the brain. And that's why these kids have damage to the brain when they grow up, because every class of psychiatric drug, which they got pushed into as 7-year-olds, causes damage to the brain long term. It's a disaster. Now, my own response, and by the way, it doesn't look like I'm going to get to talk a lot about guilt, shame, and anxiety. I've really gotten into wanting my book. I really want to talk to you about the children today. It's really so important. And this is a good one to send around to people. I've decided it's time to take a stand, to come out and say we should never give children, by that I mean anyone under 18, psychiatric drugs for the control of their behavior, the treatment of disorders, the treatment of mental diseases, whatever you call it. We have to stop it. Now, how can you do this? Well, I was able in the early 70s to stop most of the psychosurgery in the Western world and some of it in the non-Western world. And I did it in part by making a definition that could be used in the courts and it could be used in legislation that I wrote in Congress, a definition to distinguish between lobotomy, psychosurgery, lobotomy, you know, and that stuff from, for example, doing regular surgery on the brain for epilepsy. And my definition was something like this, that psychosurgery is an intervention into the brain that compromises or harms brain tissue for the purposes of the control of behavior or emotions or psychiatrically diagnosed disorders. Behavior, emotions, psychiatrically diagnosed disorders. In other words, anything in that whole category, if you go into the brain, open the brain, go into it, and do something to harm the function of the cells, and indeed, in case of psychosurgery, to destroy the cells, that should be something that people stop. And we won a huge legal decision about that that stopped it all in the state hospitals and the VA. And my campaigning basically shut down most of the projects. Not all. There's one at Harvard and maybe at Brown. But most of it throughout the Western world, really, though they're trying to come back again. Well, if you think about that definition, if you leave out opening the head to do surgery and use the same definition, that fits all the drugs and electroshock treatment, because all psychiatric drugs harm the brain. That's the brain-disabling principle of psychiatric drugs, which I describe in detail in Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal and in my earlier book, Brain-Disabling Treatment in Psychiatry. All the interventions are harming the brain. That's how they work. We don't have any drug we put in that makes the brain work better. In fact, the way we discover psychiatric drug is we find one that harms the brain of a rat and changes their behavior. And if it harms the brain of the rat, changes their behavior, we may have a psychiatric drug. That is not an exaggeration. That is 100% of the truth. So it's time to stop doing this to our kids. We don't have to ever do this. If we stop doing it, it will be a blessing to humanity. And we'll have to think of new things to do, very new things to do with our kids, like spend time with them, radical things like learning how to discipline our kids, taking education classes on child parenting. Our teachers will have to relearn the control of their kids so that, like my wonderful mother-in-law, Jean, they won't have all these problems in their classes because they'll learn, like she did a few decades ago, how to handle a classroom. All these new radical things we'll have to learn to do. Hang on, folks. That was my cell phone, which I forgot to turn off. I've been really excited about just talking to you today. Just talking to you. Well, I published a paper in a journal called Children and Society. It's a European peer-reviewed journal in which I outline everything I've been telling you today. You can find it on my website. Go to Scientific Articles right up near the top. You'll find this one. I hope you'll read some of my books too, but you can get this article for free. And it outlines all this data. I actually forgot about it as I'm just getting in and unraveling all this for you. Gives you all the data I've been describing in greater detail. And it ends up calling for all the data about damaging children and the follow-up studies. And it ends up calling for professionals and other people to start working toward a ban on giving these drugs to children. And at the same time, in the last couple of weeks, to go along with this article, I've released three at once short videos for my Simple Truths About Psychiatry. You can get these videos on my website. You can get them on you just go and do whatever you do on the internet to get all this stuff. It's all out there. So I've now got the article. It's quite a package. It's an amazing package. This article, and I've got these three short films, one about ADHD and its harm, one about drugs and their harm, and one about let's call for a ban on doing this to kids. And I put it together in a package, and I put it on Bob Whitaker's website, madnessinamerica.com, as a blog. You can go to madnessinamerica.com. You can go to that blog, Bregan's blog. It's had well over 3,000 views now. And from that blog, you can go to my article, bing, on children. And from that blog, you can go, bing, to my three videos on stopping the drugging of children. So, taking a deep breath, I can't think anything more important for you all to do than to find ways, talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, tell them when they're drugging their kids that you don't think it's a good idea. Go look at Dr. Bregan's blog on stopping the drugging of children on Whitaker's website. Madness in America. You'll see videos. You'll see a scientific article. It's so scientific, I can't believe it. I just put a lot of material into that article leading up to the conclusion, let's stop doing this drugging. Please. Please. It's just getting worse and worse. You know, more and more people, parents, know they shouldn't put kids on drugs. More and more. We hear that all the time. But the drug companies have so much power that they're getting to more and more parents who don't know this. So let people know. If you're a therapist, stop being shy. Your moral responsibility is not to encourage your patient to take psychiatric drugs. It's to help your patient. That's your moral responsibility as a therapist. Send them to dealing with children. Send people to my blog on Madness in America. On stopping the drugging of children. Get all this fabulous information. Okay. You can tell this means a lot to me. I think I'm going to start maybe about once a month just talking directly to you. I can't even tell you why I haven't done that on a regular basis. You know, I go out and I give lectures all the time, all over the country, And I'll talk for 3 hours without notes. So this is something I don't have a lot of trouble doing. And I do it all the time. And the last time I was out a couple of weeks ago giving a talk, when the talk ended after an hour and a half, nobody left. They stayed for another hour. So, I mean, it tells me I should just be talking to you more often. So maybe I'm going to try to establish in the future, and I'll let you know what it is, what day, maybe even a regular day once a month where I just talk to you. What's in my heart, what's in science, what's happening. And let's see let's see how people like it. And, you know, let's see if this talk today, if we get more hits on this than some others. If you think this is important for me to be talking, one way to let me know, the best way to let me know would be to say to your friends, listen to today's show. Dr. Bregan talks for an half an hour about some of the newest things in psychology at his conference, but then he talks for half an hour about children, a ton of valuable information. And so if I see that a lot more people than usual are downloading this, I'll know that you want to hear me talk directly to you. In closing, the conference, the 2015 Empathic Therapy Conference, go to empathictherapy.org to learn about it. It's at Michigan State University campus in East Lansing, April 17 through 19. Coming up, folks, coming up in exactly 1 month, April 17th and 19th of this year, I think the best conference we've ever done, maybe the best one you'll ever go to. Thanks for listening to me, folks.